Call the April 8th Plan Commission meeting order. Ms. X, please call the roll.
Mayor Olson?
Here.
Commissioner Hogan?
Here.
Commissioner Burkhart?
Here.
Commissioner Haley?
Here.
City Engineer Morrow?
Here.
Alderwoman Hanneman?
Here.
Commissioner Leon?
Here.
We have a quorum. Please rise and join the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, first item on the agenda is approval of the regular meeting minutes of August 18th. Any additions or corrections?
Second.
Hogan and Haley. Jeez, man. It's going to be one of those nights. All those in favor of the motion, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Item C is Unified Development Ordinance Rewrite Task Force Presentation Diagnosis Review of the UDO Project by Hausia Levine. Mr. Martinez.
Yeah, just a brief introduction. Good evening, Mayor. Regula Martinez, Principal Planner. So tonight we have the Ruben Chill from Hausia Levine and J.B. Hines from Virtually Planning to present the first workshop that we have about the actual draft UDO sections and review of the proposed articles. The last workshop that we had was about the diagnosis and the preliminary recommendations. Now we are entering to the width of the UDO itself. We will hold three workshops of the UDO sections, and this is the first one. So, Ruben.
Great. Can everyone hear me like this? Great. Well, thank you and good evening, commissioners. Our team is glad to be here with the first four articles drafted of the Unified Development Ordinance update. As Regula mentioned, thank you. I think this will work here. As Regula mentioned, the last time we reviewed together as a group was in February of this year to review the preliminary diagnosis and recommendations regarding the Unified Development Ordinance. So at that point, it was all recommendations and conceptual high-level recommendations that we would then proceed in writing the that would inform the Unified Development Ordinance rewrite. Tonight we have the draft articles 1 through 4 to present and discuss together and get feedback on. So that is the goal of tonight. The agenda here is we'll first go over introductions once more. And then go through the draft UDO articles 1 through 4 sequentially, starting with general provisions, establishment of districts, district-specific standards, and finally use-specific standards. And we'll cover next steps in the process. And here we have our project team. You've seen this all before. Tonight we have myself and J.B. Hines here joining me. You've met Jackie Wells, senior planner with Hausia Levine before. And back in the office we have John Hausia, Nick Davis, and Daniel C. also on the project.
Hey, Ruben.
Yes.
Those are all informative, but we got a long agenda, so.
That is right. So we will proceed to look at the first four articles here now. Proposed UDO structure, we've seen this before, of the first of all 12 articles, just the first four tonight. So Article 1 is general provisions, and in this draft article, we've consolidated several sections of the ordinance that specify title, purpose, intent, jurisdiction, provisions regarding vested rights, and severability of clauses. The provisions that set up the defensibility and interpretation of the UDO as a whole. Together at the beginning of the document, we haven't made any major revisions at this point to that article, just a reorganization.
How do you want to do this? You want to do, because I do have some issues on this. How do you want to do this?
Please stop me at any point if any of the commissioners would want to jump in with questions.
Just want to, okay. Mm-hmm. All right. Under L, I'd suggest changing the word restrict to control. I just don't like the word restrict in a document like this because it mm-hmm. implies inflexibility. Likewise, under 15-106, and I hate this numbering system, construction of the UDO at the end of the line, it says all building structures and uses authorized by permit prior to effective date. There's exceptions down towards the bottom. So I'm wondering if the word permit is appropriate or too restrictive. This, you guys can work this out in the future, but similarly under paragraph C, any change in the plans, the structures, or use, if a building permit or certificate of occupancy, I think both of those are a little restrictive, a little late down the line. Just give it. JB's got a question.
Well, not a question. The point of this is to protect anybody who had sought and gained approval before any changes that might affect them have taken place.
Right. And I'm saying it's too restrictive to that. That requires a building permit to be issued in order to protect the applicant rather than an application being submitted. And approved, yeah.
Pending application.
So my suggestion is if the application is submitted, they're good. They go with the old UDO, unless they ask to go with the new one. And this says, unless you've got a building permit issued, you're not protected. That's the way I read it.
More typically, it's if your application is in the door when the old one is in place.
That's the way we'd like
it applies.
I think.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, that's it.
And that's throughout this section.
Building permit's okay. But that B is the problem there.
Okay, yeah, we can make that change.
B is the issue.
That covers Article 1. Were there any other questions or thoughts on Article 1?
Thank you. I've gone through this in great detail. And I have lots of notes and comments and questions, and I don't really think we want to go through each and every one of them here and now. For an opportunity where I'm going to be able to sit with the planners and talk through some of this stuff. It's a very good document, but beyond typos, there's many questions that I have that I don't know if they're right until somebody gives me the answer of why they're in there.
I'm ready now.
There you go.
Okay. So the point is I don't think anybody wants to sit through it all, and I'm not inclined to go through my pages of notes at this point in time. Is there some other venue where I can, again, sit down with the consultants on an informal basis and go through this, or how painful does it want?
Any major concerns, Commissioner Haley?
In particular the zoning map, which is still rife with inaccuracies, mistakes. talk about that then.
One thing that we've done in the past is have an assembled document of comments from commissioners that we can then take and incorporate the things that are straightforward to incorporate that might just take us a sort of edit from our team and then come back with the city, with staff, or at a subsequent meeting like this with the types of things that we might need to discuss a little bit more. So if there would be a way to send your comment along, then we might proceed like that.
Do you want to type them up?
I would need a live copy of the document that I could redline, strike out, and forward. But again, some of these are may not be issues if I have the answer to them right away.
Regular wants to. I think we could. I volunteer as tribute if there's zoning questions. I mean, just to talk through some of the more procedurally stuff.
Maybe we can have Commissioner Haley
certainly do that.
Talk. Just call one of you on the phone and go through.
Or sit down. Not through it.
Well, they're from Chicago,
yeah.
So.
Yeah, we could.
Whatever works, yes. If staff and mayor want to organize that,
okay.
It's totally fine within my scope. I'm happy to.
Okay, good.
Yep.
So what we'll do is we'll arrange a meeting, whether it's on phone or in person, between any commissioner that wants to talk, except for we can't violate open records and open meetings.
Right.
Laws. So, see, after 20-some-odd years, you finally trained me, Mr. City Attorney.
And with ongoing workload, I first received this when the agenda packet went out and have not had a chance. So I speed read through it.
As did I.
I didn't.
So you're okay with working with Regulo and getting it taken care of that way?
That's fine.
Okay.
That's fine.
Cool. Alderwoman Hanneman.
And I do agree with Commissioner Haley. I have a lot of notes, too, probably not as many as he does. But, you know, just some general comments. Like, just as an example, on page 2 of Article 2, just like there's three different styles of the phrase moderately low densities in terms of, like, where the dash is falling. Or the hyphen. Mm-hmm. We either have a hyphen, we don't have a hyphen. Sometimes it's between low and density, and sometimes it's between moderately low. And I just want to see consistency in that. So those are just things that I mainly have. But again, I think some questions that deserve some further... And maybe you could answer this one right now. So on page 3 of 5, number 4, the BMU, South 27th Street Mixed Use District. I know there are a lot of design standards that were put into that overlay district, and I feel like condensing it down to one paragraph, so is that going to be expanded upon further in the document with that level of detail? Okay.
Yep.
Okay, that helps.
These are your purpose statements.
Okay.
This is the elevator speech, typically to a judge, of what's the purpose of this district.
Gotcha. Okay, thank
Alderman,
you.
Alderman, let me jump in on that.
Yeah.
On that particular paragraph, where I'm on paragraph 4, the BMU zoning district, page 3 of 5 on section 2.
Mm-hmm.
It references specifically South 27th Street, along South 27th, given to South 27th Street, et cetera, et cetera. I'm not sure that we want to limit that zoning district language to just 27th Street because I can see it being used elsewhere in the city.
Good point.
Well, the thing is that the existing South 27th District and this proposal correspond to the corridor plan that is specifically for South 27th Street.
I stand by my statement. I don't see any issues with the 27th Street corridor standard that couldn't be applied in some other district, some other mixed-use district. Personal opinion. You can can vote on it later, right? But if you got a mixed use, here we go again, right? You can do a BMU 27 if you want to be specific like that. So, okay, that's it for me. Anybody else? Mr. City Engineer.
I had a general question. I've been debating whether start at the beginning or finish up with it. Since we have a pause in the action, let me ask it here. As I was reading through this, the thought was is that, hey, I don't remember this in our existing. So, like, for example, the airport standard on 27th Street, it's like, is it really that close? But the question is, how do we plan to talk about the changes, or how is this different than our existing UDO? I'm thinking about trying to train staff. You know, I mean, basically I'm going to hand them a new document. It'd be nice if I had something that, here's how this is different, here's how it is like from our existing document that we use every day. And probably those of us that don't use it as often, it might be nice to point out the things that are, you know, this is a completely new concept compared to our existing document, or this is very much like what we have in our existing document. How easy or hard is that to document, to convey to us, so as we read through these, we can kind of say, oh, this is, I don't remember seeing that in our existing document, but it's already there. Or, well, this is something completely new and different. I should really read this paragraph in more detail. Do you guys ever do anything like that to get people to transition from an old document to a new document?
JB, can you pull the mic towards you, please?
Yeah.
Behold.
Yes and no. The full red line is, you know, important for tracking changes, but not useful in the way that you're speaking of.
Right.
I think, Ruben, you're going to be pointing out some of the key changes, like consolidation of the residential districts, the floodplain mm-hmm. standards, as we go through this tonight.
Sorry for interrupting, but the first time you're here, you basically said, you know, we're going to take these residential districts, and now they're going to be this one. And that was kind of nice to be able to see the link between the old and the new and how they're, you know, how you were parsing that apart.
Mm-hmm. And, yeah, that's your presentation.
That was an example, but.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so the ordinance text, as it's written, doesn't include a graphic that shows which of the existing residential districts are kind of going into the new ones. But we do have those maps that show the existing zoning within the proposed districts and sort of a high level of which districts are going into the new proposed ones. So they're not part of the draft ordinance itself as we drafted it here, but we can definitely provide those.
Yeah, I don't think I'm asking for it to be part of the new document, but how do we transition from the old to the new to quickly understand the differences, I guess. Mm-hmm. I think, I apologize for interrupting her. I think she was probably on her track to maybe answer my question more in more detail. No? Okay. Sorry.
Mr. Senator.
What jumped out at me doing the speed read was Article 2. And on the run, it appeared that the entire city of Franklin will have to be rezoned. And Marion's nodding her head yes. And my recollection from around 1998, one of the reasons the C1 district throughout the city still remains is because the city did not want to rezone the entire city. Every property owner gets notice, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And so the C1 was left for when that particular property, which has C1 on it, is going to be rezoned or redeveloped in some way, then it gets rezoned by the property owner. So this is a huge undertaking.
Yeah.
And in terms of the city engineer's questions, there essentially is no relation. It's all new.
Well, I think I don't think that's quite. I don't think it's quite all new. And I do think you've got some maps in here that can show these suggestions. I think we make clear in the diagnostic that you have a proliferation of zoning districts. You have a lot of property owners with non-conforming homes. And so, yeah, it's an undertaking to straighten out your zoning districts. I think Ruben can speak to the GIS analysis that they've been doing to get to this. Yes, it's an undertaking. It also is one that could greatly benefit a lot of your property owners who are stuck as non-conforming uses through no fault of their own.
How many non-conforming uses?
That's what Ruben can talk about their GIS work that went into this set of districts. That was, yeah.
So we had done some analysis on the non-conforming lot sizes and or the portion of lots within the districts that don't conform with the existing lot sizes and width standards, and did some revising of those standards based on that to make the standards kind of fit the existing development patterns more. And also, we have those numbers in the diagnostic report itself that we had discussed, and we're glad to provide that again. And we did some of the map tweaking, the adjustments to the map itself based on existing uses to make existing uses that might be non-conforming in the current district conform. So that was sort of the approach there. And it's something that we'll continue to do, is sort of fine-tune the zoning map. But that was the approach to adjust the district width and area standards to reduce non-conformities and to reduce non-conforming uses, just based on the current use. And as far as rezoning goes, we did do some figuring in the diagnostic phase to determine the exact number of parcels in each district that would be required to be rezoned under the proposed zoning map. Which we do have in these maps, we're glad to provide. But some of the major adjustments to the zoning map are really just changing the title and abbreviation scheme of the zoning districts. So that RSE, Suburban Estate Residential, is essentially the R3 that exists now. There really isn't much change to the uses allowed, the dimensional standards, setbacks.
But you still have to rezone it because it's a new district.
Yeah.
It goes from R3, whatever.
Just adding a comment that I recall that when former planning manager Heath Eddy presented the options about the UDO, the first option was no action, and to a full rewrite. So, and the Plan Commission selected the full rewrite. So that's why this project, it's or this proposal, is in some cases eliminating zoning districts. So they, yeah, it's because it's a full revision of the UDO.
It appears that all the districts are changed. Are eliminated, and they're all new districts. That's why I said rezone the entire city.
I do think it's important to distinguish between renaming a district and creating a new one for consistency's sake. If it does not change the uses and the dimensional standards, I don't believe that changing the name of the district constitutes a rezoning.
Well, absent the terms of the new district being a mirror image of what it is right now, which I doubt, it's a rezone. You're letting more different kinds of properties or whatever, and it has more standards in it, is my guess, which is different than the existing district.
I don't believe if we look at the detail that you'll find that that's universally the case.
That might be something to look at the legal precedent for, but we have passed zoning ordinances in the past that were essentially a change in the district title, but not a significant change in the types of uses allowed or the dimensional standards, and had those types of things passed. I believe even a couple in Wisconsin, we could point you, we could send as well, that a change to the district title doesn't really constitute a rezoning. But that's something we can definitely look at together.
What's the public gonna think of that? You changed my zoning.
Yeah.
How do we respond to the public? Well, it's just a name change, but.
Mm-hmm. That's something that certainly can come up, and the important thing to bring up at that point is there isn't a major change to the type of uses, if any at all, that are permitted on a given piece of property if we switch it from the district title from R3 to suburban estate single family residence district. The title changes, but the type of use that's allowed, if someone were to apply for a land use permit, the type of use they could do is really not changing. The setbacks really aren't changing. The lot widths and area standards are being adjusted, but okay. It really doesn't result in a significant change in the type of development allowed.
Well, it's different requirements, lot width, and that's a zoning district. And just off the top of my head, with regard to existing numerous legal non-conforming uses, I'm looking at a developer who's been developing residential subdivisions for three plus decades ago, the population of the city was somewhere approaching 20,000. Now it's in the 35, 36 realm. It's almost double. I dare say that all the subdivisions that were developed, all of those are conforming lots, or they wouldn't be there because they were approved over time. As opposed to pre-existing, or somebody not getting inspected when they build a new house.
We can certainly send the maps of those non-conforming lots again. Again, and there are, to your point, there are many subdivisions that are conforming with the existing standards currently.
Okay. I got something here in a minute, but first we're going to go to Commissioner Leone, who is down here. Commissioner Leone.
With due regard to my fellow commissioners, I believe we're starting to pick apart the proposal before the task force has been able to give their full presentation. I would like to see the rest of the presentation before we get into some more of these details. I think we're on page 3 or 4.
3-0.
So I'd like to see the rest of the presentation and maybe save questions until they're done presenting.
Mm-hmm. And that's a slightly different take on what I was about to say. I was about to say, let's postpone this for a few minutes and take care of the business items, because we got people with business items here that really don't want to see this.
I agree with that. I'd even propose tabling the rest of this presentation until after the D1 and
you don't want to use that language though. Okay. We're going to postpone this particular item for a few minutes. We're going to deal with the business items at hand. So with that, we're going to move on to item D1, a public hearing on a proposed amendment of boundaries. And SR is in another room. proposed boundary amendment for TID 6. This essentially is adding a small industrial parcel to the south side and gives us a modified developer's agreement. Mr. Martinez. I'm sorry. Let's do it. Commissioner Burkhart.
I'll be abstaining from D1 and E1 on the agenda.
Okay. Thank you. For the record, we still have quorum. It's Todd, right?
That's correct, Mayor. Would you like me to give a quick overview?
Mine like a steel trap. First, we have to do the public hearing notice, please. Ms. X.
Notice is hereby given that the Plan Commission of the City of Franklin will hold a public hearing on September 8th, 2022 at 7 p.m. The meeting will be held in Franklin City Hall, located at 9229 West Loomis Road in Council Chambers. The hearing will be held to provide the public a reasonable opportunity to comment on the proposed amendment boundaries of Tax Incremental District Number 6 and the proposed amendments to its project plan. The proposed amendment would add territory to the district as permitted under Wisconsin Statute Section 66.1105 parentheses 4H2. The proposed amended boundary is identified on the map included in this notice. Based on the planned use of the properties within the boundaries at the time of the creation, territory within the district was previously identified as suitable for mixed-use development, projects to be undertaken within the district, and costs to be incurred, project costs, will continue to be for the purpose of promoting mixed-use development and will include payment of cash grants as development incentives to the owners, lessees, or developers of land located within the district. As permitted under Wisconsin's statute section 66.11054H1, the list of estimated project costs and the current project plan would be amended and increased by approximately $459,000. All interested parties will be given a reasonable opportunity to comment on the proposed amended boundaries of the district and the proposed amendments to its project plan. A copy of the proposed amendment to the district project plan, including a description of the proposed amended boundary, is available for public inspection and will be provided upon request during normal business hours at the office of the city clerk in Franklin City Hall, 9229 West Loomis Road, and can also be viewed on the city's website. Supporting materials are posted for the September 7th Joint Review Board meeting and the September 8th Plan Commission meeting.
We have a properly noticed public hearing. Mr. Martinez, what are we talking about? And then we'll go to Mr. Taves.
Actually, Mr. Todd from Ehlers, the consulting, is presenting this item.
Mr. Taves.
And we had a deck of slides, but it sounds like that might not be queued up, so I'm going to paraphrase briefly and then happy to get into greater detail on any questions you may have. So this is tax increment district number 6, and the commissioners were provided with a copy of the
regular. Click on this slide.
No, this presentation does not include this item. This is separate.
That slide includes a map of what we're talking about.
That might help if we at least have a map.
Right. Yeah, I can go to the trade.
So this is tax increment district number 6, existing district created in 2018. As of the first of this year, it had incremental value of $2.72 million, all told, including territory that was added via an amendment that was undertaken in 2020. There is 233 acres. This is, again, a mixed-use district, so a combination of residential, commercial, and industrial development, and this table shows the relative breakdown divided fairly evenly between the three various purposes. There are two purposes to this amendment. The first is to add territory. This is a fairly minor amendment. There was a certified survey map approved and recorded earlier this year that now causes the TID boundary to no longer follow the parcel lines. This is primarily intended to correct that situation. The lot in question is the site for the Rise Commercial District, and again, this will align the district boundary with the new lot line. Anytime we amend the plan, we also just update and refresh the numbers. I think in the hearing notice, it indicated that there was an increase in project cost, but as we've continued to work on this, ultimately, we now anticipate that the plan will require about $380,000 less in expenditures than the last amendment. This is the physical geography, again, blue existing district. The purple shaded portion, that is the portion of the new parcel that is not presently within the tax increment district that will be brought in this amendment so that it aligns with the TID boundary, 8.42 acres in total. This parcel is suitable for commercial development. Restated project costs through the First Amendment, $20.3 million. Now we're at $19.9 million. So again, there's that $380,000 drop, showing then again the variation in the individual line items. In terms of prospective development, again, I mentioned $2.7 million on the ground as of the first of this year. The nearer term development that is projected in the exhibits in the plan include the Ryan Meadows single family subdivision, the Woodfield Trail condos, along with a few single family lots, the Rise development, and other potential commercial and industrial development. Through the end of the 2026 construction season, we're presently anticipating the creation of roughly $85, $86 million in tax increment. Exhibit from the plan, but the thing I wanted to point out here, recognizing it's not particularly legible, is that if the district were to remain open for its entire 20-year life at a constant tax rate, that development on the previous table would generate roughly $27 million over the life of the district. When we run that through the cash flow, along with the guarantee payments that are covered in several agreements that the city has with developers in the district, we end up with roughly $43.2 million in projected revenues over the 20-year life. We have city debt service, most of which is already in place. The agreement, as proposed to be modified, includes two municipal revenue obligations with projected total payments of roughly $6.4 million. We take out the capital that was funded primarily by the bond proceeds, and what this all tells us is that we would expect cumulative revenues to be greater than the accumulated liabilities by the year 2033. So while this is a 20-year max life district, we are projecting presently that it can close in 13 years. Or roughly 10 years from now. And lastly, just the schedule. We will be presuming the commission advances this evening. It will go to the council on the 20th, and then we've scheduled a joint review board meeting for the week thereafter to complete the process. Happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you, Todd. Director of Administration Stino, do you have anything to add?
I think maybe just to add, not necessarily germane to this conversation, but the council is considering an amendment to the district, to the development agreement that's being considered by the council at this point. But basically, it's just maybe running aside of this process, not really part of this process. So the amendment is simply, as Todd said, a very small territory amendment to the existing TID.
Geography. Our public hearing notice asks us to ask the developer if they have anything that they want to present before we open a public hearing.
SR Mills, 4011 80 Street, Kenosha. Appreciate the consideration on this. I think it cleans up an issue. We have a great business, a new member of the community in Rise, and they needed a bigger site. So it was a bit of a quagmire as we had to purchase an additional site to be able to roll them in to accommodate what they needed. But we think they're excited. They've closed on the site and looking forward to breaking ground. Happy to answer any questions you might have.
Thank you. Okay. We have a properly noticed public hearing. We also have a presentation from the applicant, which is the city, and the developer. And so with that, I will open the public hearing on this matter. Is there anyone wishing to speak on this territory amendment? Is there anyone wishing to speak? Seeing no one rise, I will also note that there's a letter from Joseph Arsencata, an attorney for the plaintiffs in the lawsuit, Franklin FCA versus City of Franklin, objecting to the addition of the property. We'll have a copy of it for you in a matter of moments. And with that, anyone else wishing to speak? I will close the public hearing on this matter. Questions from the commission? Commissioner Leone. Oh, wait a minute. It requires that you push the button, but I'll push it for you.
Thank you, Mayor. Certainly want to see the letter that the city administrator is copying now before we vote. Really a simple question. The second amendment to this TID, I understand it's territorial, but is it reasonable to expect that this would be the last amendment to this TID? Or, I'm seeing some chuckles. Is it potentially future amendments that could keep this going? I would go to the applicant, which is the city, but the representative here tonight.
Mr. Mills?
I think we discussed some additional lands potentially with some of the sewer service area and the expansion. It was decided that at this time that this is probably, as far as our initiative, this would be really it. I think state statute is four TID amendments. So hypothetically, there could be two more, but certainly with our appetite and with what we're doing right now, I think this would suffice. With that said, if there's a great industrial user and they needed more land, we'd never want to rule it out, but
sure.
Certainly nothing at this time that would necessitate that from our standpoint.
Thank you.
Sure.
Take a moment here, a second.
Okay, so after reading, the letter that was just distributed, my question now will be to city attorney, and I'm specifically looking at the last full paragraph where he says that the project plan is arbitrary and inaccurate, that the objection by FCA has been made to the city and is also part of the factual basis for FCA's pending federal court action. And that they're objecting to the validity of TID number six. Can you speak to, I know you didn't write this letter, but can you speak to what they're discussing where the plan is arbitrary and inaccurate and maybe explain? I assume it's not.
Mr. City Attorney.
I agree that it is not with regard to the arguments. Those were posed in litigation, and the general standard on this end is to not comment on matters in pending litigations. Disagree that the creation of the district and everything thereafter is in any way arbitrary and inaccurate.
Thank you.
And the city of Franklin has received the consulting services from Ehlers, which is among the top, if not the top, tax incremental district consultant statewide.
So I guess I would just say that from what I'm hearing from the city attorney, City of Franklin has done due diligence in this TID project.
Correct. Okay, any other questions for staff, Mr. City Engineer? Right, you will. I pushed the button too many times. There we go. Okay, we're good.
I believe it was alluded to, but just to amplify or clarify that if we don't do this, then we have to exclude the other part that's in the current part that's in the TID. So you either have to take it in or leave it out. In either way, we would have to modify the boundary, which would count for number two of our four strikes, right? So therefore, we would be losing revenue because we'd have to take this part out.
So. Anyone else? Mr. City Attorney?
And I did bring this up with Mr. Taves at the Joint Review Board meeting yesterday, but with regard to the project plan, which at the end requires an opinion letter from the city attorney with regard to the compliance of the project plan with Wisconsin Statute 66.1105. I did the review and did prepare and sign the letter on September 6th, 2022. And since I'm assuming it's not in what was in your packet, I'll pass these out so you can have a copy of it.
And I have received that letter yesterday and it's on file.
Right, I hand-delivered the original to the mayor.
Okay. With that, is there a motion to adopt a resolution designating proposed amended boundaries and approving a project plan amendment for tax incremental district number 6, City of Franklin, Wisconsin?
I will make that motion. Second.
City Engineer Morrow, seconded by Commissioner Leone. Mr. City Attorney.
I think Commissioner Haley had a comment on the resolution. It's very minor. It's
Commissioner Haley.
It's
question on the resolution, fourth whereas, sub A, add territory from the district as permitted under Wisconsin statute section. My guess is that wants to say territory to the district rather than from.
Correct.
Which paragraph is that?
Say that again, please, Kevin.
Change from to two. Add territory to the district.
Oh.
Where?
Under the sub.
Sub A.
Sub A, under the fourth whereas, change from to two.
Two.
Two. Is that part of your motion, Mr. City Engineer? That correction?
Yes.
And Commissioner Leone?
Yes.
Both indicate aye. Ms. X, let's just call the roll.
Who made the motion?
Yes. Commissioner. Mr. Morrow made the motion.
Seconded by
Commissioner Leone.
Thank you. Mayor Olson?
I vote only to affect the outcome.
Commissioner Hogan?
Aye.
Commissioner Burkhart?
Abstain.
Commissioner Haley?
Aye.
Commissioner Morrow?
Aye.
Commissioner Alderwoman Hanneman?
Aye.
Commissioner Leon?
Aye.
With that vote, the motion carries five ayes, no noes, one abstention, and no absence. Motion carries. Thank you, Pat. Okay, let's do the next one. This is a business matter, Strauss Brands Processing. It's a time extension for their special use application. The suggestion by the city attorney is that we go to closed session. We've done this but once before. Is there a desire?
I have generally said I prefer not doing closed session, so I'll state that again here.
Anyone wish to discuss the matter in closed? Okay, Mr. Martinez, can you give us the highlights? Then we'll have that conversation again.
Yeah, as you know, the special use permit and site plan for the Strauss Brands project is under pending litigation. So that's why it was extended a year ago for 1 year, and this is the second extension, because under the pending litigation is a reasonable expectation that the special use permit and site plan be extended. This extension was not requested by the applicant. So I'm happy to answer any question that you may have, and city attorney may have additional comments.
Any questions? Commissioner, our Alderwoman.
Thank you, Mayor. Wondering if there is any limit onto the number of extensions that can be given, or if this can continually be extended year after year after year, should that be necessary? And to that end, an update on what is happening with litigation would be appreciated.
The UDO only says that the special use permits are valid for 1 year, but it's silent about the time extensions and how many.
Not being requested by the applicant, as stated by Mr. Martinez Montilva, the applicant has not withdrawn the application.
Correct.
And number two, there is no limit to time extensions. However, that is an available mechanism, not only within the Unified Development Ordinance, but also the Wisconsin statutes, and I'm speaking in terms of conditional use permits, which is the special use permit in Franklin, section 6223 sub 7 sub DE B, I'm sorry, number four, conditional use permit shall remain in effect as long as conditions upon which the permit was issued are followed, but the city may impose conditions such as permits duration, transfer, or renewal, so the city has authority under the statute with regard to duration, transfer, or renewal. And with regard to the Unified Development Ordinance, General Standards for Special Uses, Section 15-3.0701, sub G, limitations on special use permits, time limitations. An extension of time may be granted by the Common Council upon recommendation of the Plan Commission. Otherwise, no special use permit shall be valid for a period longer than 1 year. And the permit runs with the land and not the applicant. And the permit shall be deemed to relate to and to be for the benefit of and the use and lot involved. So,
thank you. I have a question. I hope somebody can answer for me. Strauss is publicly expressed their desire to no longer develop here. The property's on the market for sale. Why would we extend their special use permission when they don't want it? They have no intention of continuing to build and pursue this project, and in fact have not asked for the extension. We have. Why? This, to me, when somebody says, I'm no longer interested, that means you walk on, you move on. You're not wandering. So I'd love to hear an answer. I've torn my brain on this one for a lot, trying to figure out just the why. Why would the city be involved in this?
Well, I'll have the city attorney finish this opine, but he did opine earlier in the evening that they have not withdrawn their application. They have not for this special use. They've been granted it, and that's as far as they've gotten. publicity in the newspaper isn't a legal action. They've not withdrawn anything. So the city is following through on our responsibility. Mr. City Attorney? Well,
I agree.
All right. I sat here in a meeting where they submitted a letter, says we're not pursuing this anymore. We want to sell it. Help us sell it. We want out.
That's not what it said.
What did it say?
It said they were looking for additional time to explore their options.
It's not the option I remember. The point is I don't read the papers, but being in meetings here, we have heard repeatedly, they're not here now. They're not asking for this extension. I just cannot understand why we would give somebody an extension when they don't want it, nor apparently do they need it. There should be a common sense answer for this. Any other rational entity or person would just say, okay, fine, move on.
Mr. City Attorney.
As I've read from the Unified Development Ordinance, the special use runs with the land. It is for the property. And if the property is marketed, that's one of the interests that a potential user would be looking at, and the applicant has not withdrawn the application.
How can we know? I guess what I'm trying to understand is, because they came in, they want a meat processing facility. They said they're no longer interested in building here. Why would we put a special use on the property and let it go for somebody else unless the intention is that some other entity will come in and build a meatpacking facility there? We don't know. We are actually limiting the options. There may be somebody who wants to put a grocery store there or some other meaningful project. Why would we want to tether an existing thing with an option with the SUP? Why does that need to run with the property? Yes, it can, but what's the rationale for it?
It's there. If a different use came in that required some other approvals, that's what would happen.
Okay.
But this is there now, and the applicant has not withdrawn the application. And I'll leave it at that with pending litigation ongoing.
There's the million-dollar answer. It's a subject to pending litigation, and the questions that were being asked have been answered in prior applications. So
I appreciate what you're saying, but you're not answering my question.
That's correct. We did answer your question. But the follow-on questions are subject to litigation, and I'm not going to answer those. And frankly, I think you already know the answers to them. So anyway.
Well, how would I know the answers to that?
Any other questions? Commissioner Leone? Commissioner Leone?
I have the floor.
Anything else? Commissioner Leone?
So, again, with due regard to my fellow commissioner, Commissioner Haley, I think it absolutely is common sense to extend the time period on a previously approved SUP, which, as I recall, you voted against any other time we addressed it. So it sounds to me that it's more so the objection in the SUP that's already been passed. I think it makes sense to common sense to extend that SUP until the application is withdrawn, as the mayor and the city attorney alluded to. And I do have a question to the city attorney, and I believe you actually just addressed it, but just to verify, this extending this special use permit or having it in place during the original time period does not limit any other applicant, to use Commissioner Haley's example, of a grocery store or any other use for that property if another applicant's wanted. Is that correct, Mr. City Attorney?
Whatever the use would be has to comply with existing zoning or would have to apply for new approvals with regard to zoning or a different special use, but that would happen anyway.
But extending this doesn't limit any other applicant, correct?
Correct.
No, yeah, any other use will need to follow the same approval process, either a new special use permit or a site plan.
So I, in my opinion, the answers to your questions have been addressed here tonight and also in previous meetings. But with that, I have no other questions about this.
Mr. City Engineer.
I know that my motives have been questioned as to why I approved this to begin with. I still feel it was a very good project, and we made it the best we could with the processes we did, and it met all the needs. So since that time, we've had a lot of additional concerns or additional arguments, if you will, as to why it should not have been approved. And I will tell you that I have yet to hear one that makes any sense. In fact, they seem contrary to a lot of the issues at hand. So I'll leave it at that I'm still convinced this was a good project. And I won't reiterate the fact that you just have to keep options open until somebody else closes them. So.
Anybody else? Okay, let's try this. I got two motions. First is relative to the amendment to the special use. Is there a motion to recommend approval of a resolution to amend Resolution 2021-7788, a resolution to amend Resolution 2020-7681, a resolution imposing conditions and restrictions for the approval of a special use for a meat processing facility use upon a property located in the southwest corner of the intersection of West Loomis Road and the New Monarch Drive, Lot 83 of Ryan Meadows Subdivision, Strauss Brands LLC applicant, to extend the time for commencement of the special use development. Commissioner Leon made the motion, seconded by Alderwoman Hanneman. Ms. X, let's just do a roll call.
Commissioner Hogan?
Aye.
Commissioner Burkhart?
Abstain.
Abstains. Commissioner Haley?
No.
City Engineer Morrow?
Aye.
Alderwoman Hanneman?
Aye.
Commissioner Leon?
Aye.
According to local plan commission rules, 4 ayes are necessary to sustain the motion. That has achieved. It was 4 ayes, 1 no, 1 absent. Well, 1
abstention.
1 abstention. With that, the motion carries. The second motion is a motion to adopt a resolution to amend a resolution 2021-23, a resolution to amend 2020-24, a resolution approving a site plan of a meat processing facility with associated cattle pen, harvest floor, carcass coolers, fabrication areas, packaging areas, warehouse areas, shipping docks, operations offices, employee welfare spaces, associated mechanical support facilities and spaces of future development areas, stormwater ponds, parking lot, and truck and employee vehicle entrance drives, the southwest corner of the intersection of West Loomis Road and New Monarch Drive, which is Lot 83 of Ryan Meadow Subdivision, Strauss Brands LLC applicant, to extend the time to commence of the site plan use development.
So moved.
Second.
Commissioner Leon, Commissioner Alderwoman Hanneman. Ms. X, please.
Commissioner Hogan?
Aye.
Commissioner Burkhart abstains. Commissioner Haley?
No.
City Engineer Morrow?
Aye.
Alderwoman Hanneman?
Aye.
Commissioner Leon?
Aye.
Again, motion carries due to 4 affirmative, 1 opposed, and 1 absent. Motion carries. With that, we'll move on to E2, Cape Crossing Single Family Residential Subdivision and Plan Development District Phase 1.
Abstain, not absent.
I said abstain.
And he has returned now.
Yes. Everybody's doing my work for me. That's all right. It's good.
I'm sorry, I heard you all.
It's 8:04, and Commissioner Burkhart has returned to his seat. This is a final plat. Mr.
Thank you, Mayor. This is the final plat for the Cape Crossing development. Just a quick background. This project was presented for a CUPS of review to get Common Council input. Then we have the Plan Development District to allow for different development standards for this project, for example, smaller lots. And then we have the preliminary plat that was approved, and the preliminary plat has 3 phases. So this is the final plat for phase number 1. So this phase includes a total of 63 lots in this phase, 46 for the villas, that is the south portion of the development, and 17 for the estates, that is the northern portion. The applicant provided the necessary information for a final plat, except the letter of certification that is included as a condition of approval, that they will need to submit this letter from the Department of Administration before recording. Then we can just highlight the major issues that we have with this final plat proposal. So that is the natural resource protection. So for wetland three, this wetland gated here in this area. So the applicant has received a letter from the U.S. Army Corps saying that this wetland is not subject to federal jurisdiction. And the applicant has also received a letter from the DNR exempting an exemption from this yellow portion of the wetland. However, this other portion of the wetland, the green area, is subject to state regulations. So the applicant is providing the wetland setback and buffer on the north side of the remaining wetland, but not in the south side of the remaining wetland. So according to previous projects and also following the UDO, the wetland protection standards, the local wetland protection standards, do not apply to the area that has been accepted by the DNR. However, the wetland buffer, a wetland setback protection standards, apply from the remaining wetland. So these two red lines, the wetland buffer here and the wetland setback here. That's why we're recommending in the resolution a condition that the applicant will need to obtain a natural resource special exception to allow for impacts of this wetland buffer, because in the grading plan, they are impacting this wetland buffer area. The applicant is objecting that condition, so I will let the applicant talk at the end of my presentation. So that is for condition number 10 in natural resource protection. We'll continue to the other issue that the Plan Commission shall provide a recommendation. So we have outlet number 4, that is this triangular outlet here by Ryan Road. So according to the Ryan Creek trail plan that was adopted recently, this area here is designated as a future trailhead, sorry. So what staff is recommending and following the recommendation of the plan is that this outlet number 4 shall be dedicated to the city. If the applicant decides to dedicate this outlet 4, they can provide an assessment of the value of the outlet, and that will be used as a credit for park input fees. What the applicant is proposing is the reservation. The outlet will be owned by the developer, but is reserved for future park. So the city will need to purchase the outlet within 5 years, because that's the standard expiration of the a reservation. And the third option that is the that's not applying in this case, but I just mentioned that the UDO has a third option, that when no open space land are directly involved or are not designated, but in this case are designated by the Ryan Creek Trail Plan. So staff recommendation is number 1, dedication. Applicant's proposal is number 2, reservation. However, if the Plan Commission should select number 2, that is still consistent with the trail plan that says dedication or reservation. Staff recommend the dedication, because if the portion is not, does not happen in 5 years, then we'll lose the opportunity to have the trailhead.
Then there's the small issue, if we choose number 2, but where do we get the money to pay for the land? So.
Correct. And the staff is recommending approval of this final plat with the 2 notes about the natural resource protection plan, that the applicant is injecting one of the conditions, And the staff is asking for the Plan Commission to select one of these three options about the outlet number four.
Commissioner Haley.
Thank you. I'm going to try and keep it short. I've expressed my concerns about this project before several times. Many of them have not been addressed, despite the fact that people tell me they've been addressed. They're still not here. I can't support this project. As I look through the UDO rewrite, I'm seeing things we're going to approve out here that we wouldn't under that rewrite. We won't get into the details, but the point is, this never should have been a PDD. Too many buildings, too much whatever. So we've sidestepped around the natural resources. We're going to ignore the hydric soils, the soils reports that said, be aware. And we're just going to go ahead and approve it. As far outlot four, I don't know why the city would want it, period. I know it's been dedicated as a trailhead, but the site is 90%+ encumbered with easements, with more to come. And our UDO doesn't allow structures being built on easements. Okay? So the whole idea is we take out lot four, we put some sort of a trailhead there. Oh, and yeah, by the way, we used it to bring in the water main that needs to cross under We Energy's properties and through the site through this emergency pedestrian access. I brought it up. Nobody seems to want to talk about it. The wetland delineation project that's been prepared since we started this reviewing this project shows wetlands on the We Energy's properties, significant wetlands. And they're not being shown on these plans because it's not part of the plat of the subdivision. It's land that's owned by somebody else. But yet we want to put a trail across it. We want to put a sanitary sewer across it. We want to bring a water main through it. And we don't know for a fact that we can or that it's buildable. The natural resource issues, they're there. And I specifically asked, yes, we got answers to all the other wetlands, the one at the street, not this one. Well, it's not our property. We don't need to worry about that. In order for this project to be built as proposed, you will need to basically decimate those wetlands. Find out. I suggest right at the beginning, get the answer to that question. But we ignore it. So besides all of the bigger problems I have with this, it should have never been a PDD, in my opinion, but we're now presented with a final plat. It's moved ahead. Well, I've got two different sets of plans here. One that's labeled overall landscape plan. It's different. It shows landscaping, yes, but it also shows a trail system out front. I've got another plan that's not labeled, but I'm to assume that this is the plat we're looking to approve. Or is there yet another one to appear? Okay? We're allowing setbacks on side yard setbacks, 7.5 feet. That means houses within 15 feet of each other. I'm going to ask you to visualize that again. And then think about where you live in Franklin. Can you name me another subdivision where the houses are 15 feet apart? Probably not. So question I have is, what is the disposition of this trail? It's not showing up on the plat, the trail out front. It is showing on the landscape plan. We had talked about, is there a need for it if we get the trail right? I understand there's a bigger plan. I'm all about trails. We don't know where the trails are going. On this side, on the south side, through the development, it's something we're stumbling through. And it's just foolhardy to make decisions like this that you live with forever when you haven't answered all the questions. And a lot of people in this room won't be sitting here in 5 years when the neighbors are all PO'd at each other because they're living in each other's backyards. They don't even show in here where, for example, gas, electric, and cable, whichever your house needs to have, or where do those easements go? So now those are all being forced into the backyards. You've got 25-foot backyards. How many people want to live in a backyard that they can't even plant a tree in because it's encumbered with easements and there's a petroleum pipeline right there and don't dare to plant a tree? So these are all the things, you know, this is me talking, but it's something that our elected officials should be concerned about. This development does not have to be this way. It does not have to be this many units. And certainly, if you're going to roll the dice and go down this path, then answer all the questions first. And the questions never got answered. I had 5 to 10 of them. And the answer is, oh, just don't worry about that, or we'll figure something else out. So I can't support this in any way, shape, or form. If we're going to approve it, then I'd suggest that somebody clean up the plans and label it so it says final plat, so we know what it is we're approving and what they have to live by. Address the issues of where those easements would be. Resolve. What do we want Outlot 4? Do we ever want to own that? It's nothing but a utility corridor. It's 10 feet higher than the adjacent grades, surrounded by wetlands. It's a disaster and it's a mess, and every one of the utility companies uses that as an access point to get to maintain their equipment. So I'm not saying it can't happen. Why are we approving a development that will never come back here again except for phase two, when we have unanswered questions and it's probably not in the best interest of Franklin? And I feel really terrible for the people that will live here, because my guess is they won't be happy 5 years from now once they figure out what's going on, that they've got open hunting on the adjacent land, on state land, that you've got two gun clubs firing off all times of the day and night. It's not the sort of place that you want to put a high density development. I know we're not going to talk about density, and I'll stop ranting on that. But by gosh, if you're going to approve it, get it right. Know what it is we're approving, because this is a moving target. And they've got a whole second phase coming that will have all of these issues compounded. Limited access for service vehicles. You've heard me tell all of this before. I'm very disappointed that this continues to move forward in this fashion, and I won't be supporting it in any way. But clean it up if you do.
Anyone else? Commissioner Leone, push your button, please. And look at that. There you go.
I believe Mr. Martinez said the applicant did object to condition 10, right? And I'd like to hear from
the natural resource protection, the NRC requirement.
I think maybe the condition was the outlot with our ability to. So.
Hi there.
Is that better?
Great. Should be on.
Yeah. The condition regarding, is this supposed to be on?
You're not
going to
hear it.
regarding the outlot and whether we dedicate it or reserve it, we don't care. I mean, that lot has always been dedicated from when Pat Dempsey owned the land. I mean, it is designed to be your trailhead. It will be your trailhead. Specifically, we didn't dedicate it right now because I don't know if that trail has been approved or if that outlot has been, or the trailhead has been approved. And I'm not sure that you guys want a hunk of land that you're not approved on yet. The other thing is just addressing the park fees. We can easily dedicate it on the plat. We would just need to have the development agreement updated to reflect the amount for the park fees. We could do an appraisal and things like that. I mean, the simple math, you know, paid about $22,006 an acre. This is 26,000 square feet. I mean, the value at the same per acre price of where we purchased the land is $13,680. If we put that in the development agreement as an offset of park fees, we can dedicate it on the plat right now. We have no issue with that. I mean, this is always been your outlot. It's just giving it to you, I guess, how you want it, truthfully.
Yeah, so two things. I think still needed to hear name and address, but then to the city attorney, correct me if I'm wrong, but because this is a natural resource special exception, do we need a swearing in for anything to do with this or no?
No. This
okay.
Is,
all right.
So, and I wasn't actually addressing your question.
Right.
I just wanted to get the easy one out of the way because, like, it's a non-issue for us. That trailhead is yours when you want it. Sorry, Eric Obarski, Newman Developments, North 27, West 24025, Paul Court, Pewaukee.
Mr. Chairman.
With regard to this issue, this rolled in yesterday, and I don't believe I ever had to address it. It was a 2017 Wisconsin Act that amended a statute, and short part of it, and there are numerous subsection sites preceding this.
This is not.
But it's with regard to local regulation of non-federal or artificial wetlands. If a local government has an effect on the effective date of this subsection, an ordinance or resolution regulating non-federal wetlands or artificial wetlands, the ordinance or resolution does not apply and may not be enforced. And with everything that rolled in the last 30 hours or whatever, I believe there is, and Mr. Martinez Matilva can correct or confirm that, there is a Army Corps of Engineers review letter received that essentially says that the entirety of this wetland area is a non-federal exempt wetland. And so just the verbatim what I read from this statute, that's going to need a little review. I know that Assistant Planner Marion X has 3 or 4 times on previous projects reviewed this with the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources, and they say it's not applicable except for areas that are exempted by the DNR as well as already federally exempted. And in this case, if you look at the map on the screen, it's basically the bottom quarter or so of the entire wetland. And if you see the lines going horizontally on an angle through the yellow portion there, the yellow portion is what DNR exempted and staff's process previously, and as staff had previously confirmed a number of times with DNR, the setback and wetland buffers for the part that has not been exempted, the green part on top, those remain enforceable. Mm-hmm. However, when you read what I read out of the statute, okay, it's an ordinance or resolution regulating non-federal wetlands, and an understanding from the Army Corps letter that the entirety of the wetland is non-federal. So anyway, correct, that has to be reviewed before this gets to the council.
Yeah, the background on this was, you know, we knew that to make the stormwater work and to be contiguous from the east, from the west to the east with the water flowing, there was going to be grading through the bottom part of that wetland. We consulted our wetland engineer. They made a determination to the federal government, or made a request to the federal government. The May 26th letter states, the review areas, which include W3 and W4, contain no waters of the United States subject to the Corps. So that's kind of layer one. So what the federal government determined is that this wetland and a little one up front are not federally regulated. Next step is to go to DNR then to get an exemption, saying, okay, DNR, we need to fill a certain portion of this well. We need to grade within it. Here's the amount of work that we need to do. It's 8,700 odd square feet, and the DNR grants the exemption. The DNR also reiterates, so in the DNR letter, which you guys have, dated August 10th, the highlighted portion states, the ADJ, which is the letter from the Department of, from the federal government, the ADJ letter dated May 26th from the U.S. Army Corps indicates that wetland W3 and W4 located in the ADJ review are not waters of the United States. Therefore, the area described as wetland 3 and 4 are not federally jurisdictional. So what the DNR has done is they've concurred with the federal government, saying these are not federal wetlands. So working with our, you know, we've been in Franklin for 6-7 years now. We know the UDO process and the natural resource exemption process. Our consultants, along with the legal review, say, well, you have a non-federal wetland right now that you've got an exemption to grade through, and you should be good. The DNR has approved your 8,346 square foot grading project. Why do we think we're okay? Because of what Jesse just read. Basically, 2017 Wisconsin Act 183 stating, if a local government has in effect on the effective date of this subsection, an ordinance or resolution, if you have an ordinance or resolution regulating non-federal wetlands, we have an Army Corps letter and a DNR letter stating these are non-federal wetlands, the ordinance or resolution does not apply and may not be enforced. So, you know, that's how we got, I mean, we certainly were trying to skirt any NSRPP. It was actually, how do we go about this with the federal government, the DNR, get a proper grading permit and get it approved from the state? So, you know, when we come here and then we say, well, you've got a 20 and 30 foot setback now that your limited grading work within an area that the DNR has already approved for 8,300 square feet of grading, it was a little bit surprising to us because we went through the process here. And I think I think Marion's very involved in this stuff, and I completely agree that you probably have done other ones where you've had these setbacks. Mm-hmm. I think the question is, were they non-federal? If that wetland right there is not non-federal, I completely agree that you get to put a buffer around it, because it very clearly says, local regulation of non-federal or artificial. This is exempted, but also non-federal. The entire W3 and W4 is non-federal. It doesn't affect just the portion that we're grading that the DNR has said you have the approval to do this work in. All of W3 and W4 are non-federal. And the state act says, if you have a resolution regulating non-federal or artificial wetlands, the ordinance or resolution may not apply. So I guess that's the point of us objecting to that. I mean, we worked our grading around the rest of it. I mean, in the whole scheme of things, if you read that, you're saying really all of wetland 3 and 4 shouldn't have a setback. We worked our plan around that, keeping everything outside. Everything is outside of that 50, the 30-foot setback, the 20-foot buffer, other than the area where the exemption was, where we got the approval from the DNR. And I guess that's all we're asking.
So if I may summarize, I'm hearing from the applicant and the city attorney that Condition 10 is not needed nor applicable. But that might be slightly inaccurate, but I want to ask a question to staff then. Why do you want Condition 10 in there, if you could? And I think Ms. X would probably be the right one.
So the discussion this evening, there are three levels of regulation over this wetland. It has been determined that it is not regulated by federal regulation, which means that the DNR has jurisdiction over the wetland itself. They do have setbacks and buffers that apply under certain contexts. In this particular case, they're regulating the wetland only. They've opted to exempt a portion of the wetland. That portion is therefore not subject to their requirements. However, their exemption only applies in terms of that being no longer considered a wetland for the purposes of mapping. And it therefore changes the boundary of the wetland. So there's a remaining wetland that still will exist on the site, and the regulations, our local ordinances, still apply to that wetland, to its buffer, and to its setback. So the remaining buffer is what would require the natural resource special exception for any disturbance. It's 100% protection standard. I've had a number of conversations about this topic with the DNR, because it does create somewhat of a conflict for developers who you did your due diligence at the DNR level. But they have told me that it does not obviate our local ordinances and protections for that buffer, and that the state statute with the exemption requirement, that only applies to the wetlands. So it does not obviate our standards about buffer or setback. So I think that in this case, given that there is already a condition on the preliminary plat related to protection of natural resources, it's appropriate to maintain the requirement that we continue to protect natural resources under our local standards. I'm comfortable with continuing to review this with the city attorney, because we're not totally in agreement about the federal jurisdictional issue. But again, I have discussed this with the DNR, and we're going to go back to them and ask for greater clarification on this. But my current understanding is that we can enforce our buffer.
Thank you.
So let me try to put this in layman's language. This wetland is exempt from all of our controls.
No.
The DNR has let the applicant grade in the checkered areas. But the checkered areas are also the buffers that we require for the wetland above.
Correct.
But I think the most important thing to remember there is that the entire wetland W3 was deemed non-federal. And I really think that's the key thing here, is that even when Marion was talking about the exempted area and that the rest of it is still wetland, that is correct with the rider of it is non-federally regulated wetland. That's what the Army Corps has said, and that's what the DNR has concurred with. And that is the difference. I know it's super tiny, and I know you probably have to review this, and I think that's the difference between other wetlands. If you have If you have a wetland that did not get a non-federal jurisdiction, as I said, I think that that setback is entitled, but the wetland, the non-federal exemption, the non-federal jurisdiction is for the entire wetland. The DNR exemption is for the hashed part. The State Act 183 references local regulation of non-federal or artificial wetlands. All of W3 is non-federal, even the portion outside of the DNR's exemption area. It's all non-federal. DNR exempted that portion for grading. It's a fine line, but I think it matters 100% in here.
Mr. State Attorney, and then Alderman Hanneman.
Only that, as I said earlier, it's subject to further review, and the preceding sentence, a local government may not enact an ordinance or adopt a resolution regulating a matter regulated under sub 3N, sub D, 1, or 3R, sub A, parent intro, or sub AM, et cetera, and there's more. So that's all got to.
Yeah, so I think, you know.
Got to be looked at.
I'm not an attorney. Marion isn't. Jesse is. What we're comfortable doing is saying, you know what, we'll accept that condition with the plan at the plan commission recommendation, with the intent that in the next 2 weeks, I mean, we fully intend to challenge this legally. We will get legal opinion, and I think Jesse will have time to review it by the time we get to council. And my hope would be that when this gets to the council on September 20th, that we make a motion to remove that condition at the council action.
Which seems appropriate. I mean, Alderwoman.
Our biggest fear out here is timing. And the reason we did all this, you know, we've spent a long time working with DNR. You can see the dates of these letters and everything, and it's really to get started. We still intend on getting started out there. So, you know, with that moving to the council action, I would just say if it comes to the point that, okay, we have to go for, you know, get an NSRP, you know, the Natural Resources
NRPP.
Special Protection.
SE. NRSE.
We would hope that at a staff level that we're able to start grading work out here. If we would propose to wrap this area in orange silt or orange fence and say, okay, we're not going to touch anything close to this until this is figured out, but you know the other 40 acres we really have to start working on. You know, we would be open to that if it comes to that. But it's more of a timing issue. Spending the whole summer with the Army Corps and the DNR and then getting to now in September and saying, well, you got to start a NRPP project or process. That's more concerning to us, really, is the timing.
Alderman Hanneman, City Engineer, Commissioner Haley.
Thank you. And I think that partially answers the question that I wanted to raise. And what was suggested just between you and the mayor now in terms of teasing out some more of these legal issues prior to going to council certainly seems reasonable to me. However, should... number 10 of the conditions still apply, and you'd be required to go for the NRSE, what's the contingency should the Environmental Commission not recommend that or not approve that?
Right, and it, you know, it would be a rework of the grading through there somehow, or hard piping, boring. I mean, there's options. You know, we look at it and say, I mean, that it's already been approved by DNR and looked over by their stormwater people, we would hope that it would be approved. If not, it's okay, what do we do around that?
Okay.
Commissioner Haley.
Friendly suggestion, just modify
number 10 to read, upon the applicant obtaining a natural resource special exception if required by the city. Spend the next 2 weeks figuring it out. We don't even have to worry about council. At whatever point that determination is made as to whether it applies to the city's UDO and is required, then they move forward. Or is that too simple?
I would be agreeable to that.
So, Kevin, do this slower.
After the city attorney.
This would be up to the maker of the motion, but item 10.
Go ahead.
Then you have something of a vague condition in the resolution, and if it's going to be worked on, how about a motion to adopt the resolution recognizing further review by staff with regard to condition number 10.
I'll make that motion.
Fine. I can live with that.
Okay. So the motion. Glenn, did you have something? So the motion to recommend approval of a resolution conditionally approving a final plat for the villas at Cape Crossing, the Estates at Cape Crossing subdivision, pending further review
condition
of,
number
of 10. Condition number 10 with staff.
By staff.
By staff, yeah.
Any mention in the motion about the dedication of Outlot 4?
And that Outlot 4, you want to dedicate that right away?
I personally would like to see it dedicated. I was intending to start construction, although Common Council held off on hiring a design firm to do it. So regarding some of the other issues referenced to that area, I can tell you that our consultant has not started on it, but she did put together some concept plans where a building, parking lot, and such would fit amongst the wetlands that we've delineated for the trail project. So I'll say that.
Okay.
Mayor, just for the dedication, I have a draft language for an additional condition, just to make clear the dedication.
I believe that was number one, option one, was the dedication.
Number one, dedication. Yep, I have a language for the an additional condition to be added.
Okay.
Just as long if we dedicate, we just have to make sure that the development agreement is updated to reference the value and
cool
the park
that.
Offset.
That's a different. Yes. Mm-hmm. Okay. Commissioner Haley.
I'll repeat the question I said before. Why does the city want it? You can't build anything on it. All the existing easements preclude structures. What we should do is ask the developer to grant us an easement through there for whatever purposes we need. But there's no reason for the city to own and maintain this. And our own UDO and the existing easements preclude any structures in those easement areas. And if you look at the map, it's everything but the tiny little corner. Topography goes up and down. It just makes no sense. What we want is an easement or easements. And that's all a pleasant thing to ask the developer for. Why should we pay for a piece of property that has no value? I don't care what you paid for. Something that's 95% encumbered with easements has no value, very little value, because the easements are already there. So I don't want to debate this extensively. I think it's not in the city's interest to own that, to get involved with it. With all the stuff, having to go out and mark hotlines and things, it's easier to stand back and build a trail on an easement granted by the developer if that's the case. And it's much cheaper than buying overinflated property that you can't build on anyways. I'm not talking about the wetlands in the right-of-way because they don't own that. We don't own that. That's We Energies. This is specific to the outlot. Why does the city want it?
Mr. City Engineer.
So I would, even if we don't build a parking lot and trailhead, it's still a good staging area to set up operations when we have to do mowing and maintenance and other things on the trail. When I look at the other options, the reservation, that I would try to think through in Administrator Stino's cap. Trying to come up with actual real cash in the future would be difficult, as opposed to having dedicated now. Is we have, I don't say we have enough park impact fees, but we are struggling to spend our park impact fees. So this would actually, I think, help that situation. And obviously number three is just, I think we could do that as good or better than a homeowners association could depend on. So that's why I would say dedication is my favorite.
Do you have an opinion? For the record, the reason why we're having difficult time spending our park impact fees is we never follow through on the projects we approve. Okay, let's try this again. Was there a motion, Ms. X? Okay, let me try this again.
On the first one.
Regarding number 10?
not regarding number two. I had made the motion after Jesse repeated, after Jesse.
Regarding number 10.
Oh, regarding number 10, yes. Yes.
Was there a second to the motion, Ms. X? Are you? Wait, everybody. We have two things we have to take care of in one motion, right? So let's try this again, seeing that there was no second to that motion. Is there a motion to recommend approval of a resolution conditionally approving a final plat for the Villas at Cape Crossing, the Estates at Cape Crossing subdivision, pending staff review of the
condition number 10.
Condition number 10, and a dedication of, was that lot four?
Outlot four.
Outlot four by the developer to the city. So such a motion.
That is my motion.
Second.
Seconded by Commissioner Leon. Discussion of that motion. Okay, let's try this. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 Any opposed?
No.
Ms. X, please call the roll.
Commissioner Hogan?
Aye.
Commissioner Burkhart?
Aye.
Commissioner Haley?
No.
City Engineer Morrow?
Aye.
Alderwoman Hanneman?
Aye.
Commissioner Leon?
Aye.
With that, local rules require four affirmatives. We have five affirmative votes and one no. Motion carries. Okay, so thanks, sir.
I need to depart.
Yes, thank you, sir.
Thanks.
Okay. The one final business item. I'm certain this is going to take as long. Baseballism and Foth sign review for BPC Land Limited.
Thank you, Mayor.
Mr. Rivera.
This is a sign review application for two new wall signs for the C1 building at Boba Commons. So to be installed in the south elevation. This application needs to be presented to the Plan Commission because the Plan Development District require Plan Commission approval of signs, and these two signs were not included in the approved elevations for this building. That's why this should be presented to you. With these two new signs, the overall sign area for this building, which will reach the maximum. So yeah, it's this the baseballism sign and the FOF sign. So just for the applicant information, any new signs will not be permitted except with a variance approval. And staff is recommending approval of the application. The applicant revised the sign area to be under the maximum total sign area for this building. So staff recommending approval, and I'm happy to answer any question that you may have.
Questions from the commission? Is there a motion? If that's a motion to adopt a resolution.
Second.
Approving wall sign for baseballism store and both offices of Ballpark Commons development, southwest corner, West Rosson Avenue, and South Ballpark Drive, within the Ballpark Commons Sports Village commercial mixed use area of planned development district number 37, the Rock Sports Complex. It was made by Alderwoman Hanneman, seconded by City Engineer Morrow. Questions on the motion? All those in favor of the motion, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. That came five ayes, no noes, no, and one absent. The absent is Commissioner Leon. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay. With that, we go back to the fun things. Come up to the front, Rick. Five minutes. All right. We said 5 minutes. It's been eight. It's we're back in session at 8:47. Mr. Martin. Well, okay. So this is going to sound really bad, but can we do the fast version of this?
Yes.
Please. Thank you. who's doing it?
So I think I'm gonna... Is this working?
It is now.
I think we had a quick chat, and I think what I'd like to suggest is that we collectively go through this document and just identify what the pieces are and why they're there, so that everyone at least is clear on what the purpose is of the things that you're reading, and where flag for yourselves, and then we can have a further conversation about what's going to need more time and what information you'll need to make your own decisions on the substance. Does that sound like a plan? So can we actually pull up the document itself? Rather than, I've got it here. Okay. But you all have the articles 1-4. Okay. So we had talked about the general provisions, and as Ruben walked you through, this is basically setting out the legal purpose and intent of your unified development ordinance. You know, what is it for? What's its intent? How is it interpreted? And then the issue of vested rights. So that's really just the basic foundation of any zoning. Article 2 establishes the zoning districts. This is a description of each of the zoning districts in terms of its overall purpose, its overall general purpose. Like I said, the elevator speech about what each of these are. Without getting into what the substance of each of these districts is in terms of dimensions and such, one of the charges to this team had been to try to bring consistency between zoning district and actual land use on the ground. Now, it's very clear that there needs to be more discussion of what the analysis was, where nonconformities are, but the intent of this is to give you a workable set of zoning districts. And I might suggest, if you have it, the non-redlined, mm-hmm. to give you a set of zoning districts that actually reflects what's built. And in the areas that are not built, or your commercial districts where there's a future vision, moving in that, a tool to move in that direction. So that's what Article 2 does. At the end of it, it also, this is page 4 of 5 under Article 2, it also sets out, and this is any Wisconsin zoning code has to have this, zoning boundary determinations. There's always a problem somewhere. Murphy's Law rules in zoning, so you've got to have a process for determining boundaries. Split zoning of a new lot is prohibited, so that if a new lot is created, it's got to be in one zone. That is a very typical and very well-advised provision. So that's your basic, that's what this Article 2 does. It just says, these are our districts. This is their general purpose.
Doesn't contain any regulations.
No standards, no regulations.
Specifically just, what uses are allowed.
Correct. Article 3 is where we get into the specific area and bulk or dimensional standards for each of the districts. So this is where, and these are the tables, this is pages 1 and 2 of 34. This is where we really start to talk about how big can stuff be. What are the required minimum dimensions of a lot? What are the maximum dimensions, height, bulk, coverage of buildings in each of those? Right now, you've got in your current UDO, you have some conflicts, there's some funky things, but on the whole, the direction and what was in the diagnostics was not to change much about what's already there, if anything. So this is a reorganization based on these zoning districts, which again, we understand. We need to look at the maps, we need to understand them, but this is mostly reorganization into a table. So you've got minimum lot size, frontage, yards, building height, impervious surface. Those are your basics. Then you've got on pages 2 and 3.
Can I ask a quick question? I'm sorry to go into the weeds, but the footnote on rear lot says the maximum of 10 feet shall be allowed for garages. So that means that your setback has got to be less than 10 feet from the lot line?
How did, okay, so I'm going to ask you.
On the chart under 15-3.01, A.
Yes, Ruben, he's looking right here, and that's not a usage that I'm familiar with.
Yeah, the
he's
rear yard.
Maximum setback of 10 feet. The garage can only be a maximum of 10 feet, or did you mean?
Yeah. All right, I've highlighted it.
Seems like a misstep on our part. It should be minimum. The idea is there is to encourage the garage to be in the rear yard by allowing it to be set back.
I got it. I just raised it. Yeah. We can move on.
Okay.
But thank you. Yeah.
Yep. Okay. Pages. All right, so page 2 is how do we find the rear yard, including at a corner. Then we get into pages 3 into the top of 4. This is exceptions. This is stuff that's often in yards that isn't subject to the strict setbacks. And that's everything from flagpoles to rain barrels to awnings, uncovered stairs, air conditioning units, et cetera. This is all pretty standard. Yes.
I don't see where we specifically address fences, like privacy fences.
They have their own section.
It does.
Okay. Under general standards.
Wanted to make sure.
Yeah,
yes.
Later in the ordinance.
Fences get their own. They get a lot of
we
real estate.
We can maybe lead with that chapter.
Yeah.
And stacked wood, too. Okay. So is it ever advisable in this type of a document to make a footnote? Fences are addressed at, because I think people would come here and look and say, huh, doesn't say anything about fences. Where else would I go to look for that?
Sure.
And so at least have a directional to where that would be in the document.
Yes.
Yes, I think so.
Along with a Robert Frost quote,
yeah.
I think. Okay.
Great, thanks.
All right. So pages 4, and then we've got a few pages of P's and C's. You mind your P's and C's in zoning. Mm-hmm. Uses. This is setting out how the city of Franklin treats uses, and they are either permitted, which means we generally think it's a good idea. So long as it meets standards, it's a good idea in that zoning district. Conditional, which means we really have to look at the particular proposal in the particular place to see if it's a good idea. The presumption is with the city, not the applicant. Temporary, which is an important way to have a tool to regulate temporary uses. Prohibited, which under Wisconsin law, anything that you don't make permitted is by definition prohibited. And then we have 5 is uses not listed. Every zoning code has to have some way for things that aren't quite a retail or aren't quite defined to be able to make a determination. Is this close enough to our allowable uses to make that a good idea? My favorite one, I'm not making this up, Hackensack Meadowlands Zoning District in New Jersey. We got a proposal in for an equine aquatic rehabilitation facility.
Awesome.
So they put the racehorse in the tank.
Uh-huh.
Yep. Okay. Is it a veterinary clinic? Is it what is it? Nobody had a definition for it, and we wrote a memo that said, well, it's somewhere between a veterinary clinic and ancillary facility to a racetrack. That was our determination that it was an allowable use. Plus, we got to tour it, and that was really cool. So that's what happens here.
Jamie,
now,
where did the P's and C's come from?
Okay, 99% of that is your existing code with a few tweaks, Ruben, that you'll need to go over.
Yeah, it's really, the table is consolidating and simplifying the
existing
use categories.
All right,
and
making them for the future.
Very distinct from one another and pretty much treating everything as it is treated currently, making the translation.
Where does one find the SIC codes?
Okay, wait. All right. Let's all agree. The answer to the mayor's questions are three words or less.
Okay.
Mr. City Attorney.
Just a note, you've got the term conditional use in the title and the text, and then you use special use in the tables.
But yeah, we'll fix the C's and P's later.
Yep.
Sorry, go ahead.
Another question.
Sure.
Under recreation, amusement, and lodging, we have lodging house and short-term rentals as permitted uses.
Circle.
Yeah, okay.
Okay.
We're on it. And that's something that maybe could have some more conversation offline.
Yes.
Because especially along our 27th Street corridor, we have a lot of motels that currently are actually being used as long-term residents.
Yep.
That are not zoned. And so the concern is that the way this is worded, so, and I don't know if we have to pull motels out as a special classification.
This is a good question to flag by going through this table and saying, ooh, you know, anything you see in here, This is setting it in a form where you can say, ooh, wait a minute, we've got to work on that. The way generally in zoning that you get at issues like that is the combination of this table and your definitions.
Mm-hmm.
In the case of dealing with extended stay hotel versus place that's turned into apartments illegally, mm-hmm. we handle that through definition plus conditional use usually.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Short-term rental.
That's on here. Yeah. It's permitted, and that ought not be permitted. So
you're gonna have to tell
I suggest
me
that yeah. going through these tables
yes.
is going to be a conversation.
Absolutely.
So
and a good use of your time as citizens and leaders in Franklin to really think about these.
So let's hold on that, yeah. but everybody make notes on their tables
yep.
here.
Yep.
Patty, we've been through this before, so I've got lots on both pages.
Yep.
So thank you.
Mm-hmm.
JB?
Okay. All right. So that's a good place to focus, really good place to you know, really think those through. Page 8 of 34 starts what we call the special district standards. And these can be written for any district. Right now what you see here is the start of specific standards for the St. Martin's Road Historic for treating that as a special district. And then on the next page, you do have airport overlay for the very small part where that applies.
Where? 27th Street.
Where
the old Walgreens
yep.
doesn't show on a zoning map.
It shows on the airport plans. Yeah.
We reference it.
Right. It doesn't need to, it's an overlay, so it's not going to be on that colorful draft zoning map, but it definitely still applies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the text points to the airport, the General Mitchell.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Okay. Page 10 through, my goodness, it takes up a lot of real estate. 10 through 34. Currently, Franklin has provisions for floodplain management that are in a sort of narrative form that is, you know, the city is a participant in the National Flood Insurance Program. You're able to get insurance. But that program is changing, and there are going to be much tougher standards because of the strong storms, because of the extent of the losses. Our friends at the DNR in April of this year, published a new, was it 2.5 years of work? Fowler's asleep, so
eight,
we can't ask
I'm
him.
Sorry.
How long did it take to develop the model ordinance?
Oh, for the state?
Yeah.
I think
years.
They worked on that for about 3 years.
Yep. So Wisconsin has a brand new, newly adopted model floodplain ordinance. And from an impact standpoint, it's the same land in Franklin, but it's a lot more specific as to what information you need for a review, who is going to do the review, how you go through a letter of map amendment, how you make an application for a variance, what the floodproofing standards and elevation standards are, which is why it takes up this many pages instead of four paragraphs. I would commend it to your reading. I have taken the pieces out of the model ordinance and put them into Franklin's format here. I don't know if any community has actually gone through the adoption process. Anytime you adopt floodplain regs, you have to notify DNR. Then there's a notice to FEMA. It is essential to have a minimum ordinance adopted for people here to be able to buy flood insurance. So it's important. This is the latest and greatest from DNR. This is their recommended ordinance. So that is the pages through here. If I were to characterize it, it says if you want to build something in the floodplain, you will need to hire an engineer who is certified in floodplain design. Here are the exact studies and steps. Your ordinance today says studies shall be submitted, but does not have the specificity here. This also contains some language on floodproofing that from other work is now needed to certify that a structure is okay. So, yep.
Question, clarification.
Yep.
And I found what you're saying. Shouldn't these flood fringe districts, all these, be overlays rather than zoning categories? Because what we're showing on the maps is, yep, if it's encumbered with some form of these, then the whole parcel is going by parcel boundaries, yep, rather than the quote delineated floodplain boundaries. And in essence, the reason I'm going there is because one, it's important, but yeah, two, you could have two zonings on a property.
You could. Right now, you actually have a combination of district and overlay.
That's,
you could absolutely, do these as overlay.
And
there's
that was
no
my,
reason.
One of my biggest things,
yeah,
going through this.
No
that,
reason
why
not
aren't
to.
Those just overlays? And I know
they
we don't
be.
Generally like to do overlays because
nope,
they're a little messy, but the floodplain stuff should all be overlain with,
yep,
primary zoning underlying each parcel.
Can do.
Since we've got a break in the action, I'll go back to my pet peeve. Can we number this differently than the 15.03067.12.40? Something a little bit more human?
Are you going to get into recodification of other sections of your municipal code if you do that?
We're going to rezone the entire city, so it seems to me that's going to be a minor thing.
That's expensive. Okay.
I just put it out there. Go ahead. I just raised it as an issue.
I'm going to leave that one to your staff and your clerk. I would talk to your clerk first. Okay. So that is Article 3. And then we come to Article 4. Article 4 is a little bit of a catch-all, but this is a really important section to think about, again, in terms of quality of life issues. Article 4, as reorganized, is standards that are specific to particular uses, regardless of what district they're in. So if, for example, townhouses are proposed to be allowed in certain residential districts, the standards at the top of page 2 of 20 would apply to townhouses in any district where they are proposed. Same goes for multifamily. Same goes for each of the different uses, cemeteries, campgrounds, lodging houses, short-term rentals. This is where you can add standards or conditions that you feel are needed to make these particular uses suitable within Franklin. How should those be addressed and accommodated? That's the point of this section. Mm-hmm. So things like a vehicle-related use or car washes, animal boarding facility kennel, or veterinary services. And so that's kind of what happens for this section. And Ruben, I don't know if there's any you want to particularly call attention to that where folks were should spend some time.
Some of the newer ones that we've proposed are for short-term rentals.
Right.
That's new because that is not regulated under the current UDO. That's a new use, so the use specific standards that control.
And that's page 4 of 20, if you want to circle that one as new.
I'm going to go to the helper.
Yep.
That is actually existing. That is existing, yeah.
That's existing. Oh, some of the residential use standards, like duplexes and townhomes and multifamily buildings, are new. Multifamily complexes are new to. And the purpose there, as JB was saying, is to regulate the appearance of those things and make sure they fit within neighborhoods and have an appearance from off-site that sort of generates value in the community. Many of these are from the existing UDO. So things like cemeteries,
artisan manufacturing is new.
Artisan manufacturing is new. That is a new use that we've added to the permitted use, the regulated use tables. Things like solar farms are new. Wind farms are new on page 11 now.
One that is really important because we receive normally we receive inquiries is the food truck court.
Food truck court, yep.
Mm-hmm. Accessory dwelling units are new.
Okay, and that's the bottom of page 13 of 20 is 13. Accessory dwelling units.
Was it mother-in-law?
Yes.
Yep.
Mayor.
And sort of along the same line. Yeah.
Something I'd like to raise, and I don't know that it's ever been brought up before, but I'm on page 7 of 20, where we're talking about vehicle fuel sales. I don't believe at this point in the city of Franklin we have any electric car charging stations. And I think that's something, regardless of how you feel on the matter, it's something that is we're going to see more of in the future, and I think we need to be prepared.
Okay. Mm. Generally, I put those I don't know what you guys are doing. I put them in the parking standards.
That's where we have. I think we haven't discussed it at this point, but that's where they would go.
Electricity is not fuel.
It's not discharged equally.
But in terms of what a zoning ordinance would say about EV chargers, would be if you want to require a certain number of EV spaces.
I'm not looking at that necessarily, but I'm foreseeing times in the future where your local gas station may also offer EV charging stations.
And some already do. Not in Franklin, but
no.
Just was, yep.
But it is coming down the line.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I think the city engineer's comments was an engineering comment rather than that's like that's a lamp, not a light bulb. So.
Yeah, but your fuel pump.
Okay,
I won't go there. But that's something that I think we should look at and raise and craft into that. It.
Well, I guess my point was is that you will have people drive to a certain spot, specifically refuel their car when they're discharging. So this is be more than just say somebody lives in an apartment complex where you have that.
Right.
Because we were talking about maybe the library or City Hall even where, you know, if you drive an electric car, there's a charging station, so that's where you would go. And so I would think that where you anticipate people coming and going like you would a gas station might be a little more consideration than just a charging station for a, you know, residents who live somewhere.
Okay, so two things. That's true, and that already exists. You can drive a Tesla cross-country now. You go from charging hangout to charging hangout to charging hangout. I see them in two places. One, they're in a lot of parking lots, but two, you're right that a lot of fueling stations or convenience retail can add six Tesla chargers, and then you've got people hanging out getting coffee while they zap their vehicle and move along. We can take a look at that. I know Tucson just wrote a new chunk of regs for that.
Let me offer something. Can look at that. Let me be the mayor and offer something. The differentiation that the city engineer brings up is important only for liquid fuel requirements. So I would suggest that you make D, vehicle liquid fuel standards.
Okay. Yep. All right, that works.
And
future hydrogen refueling stations.
Hydrogen
becoming standard.
Mm-hmm. I would lump hydrogen in with liquid fuel because there's a danger to it.
But it's a gas, it's not a liquid, is it? I'm so not a chemist.
It will be there someday.
The issue is danger in transfer rather than what it is that's transferring. So
if electricity is not fuel, can we just call this one vehicle fuel sales?
I guess my...
And then just have a section on electrical charging stations?
Mm-hmm. That would really be an accessory use to... I think. Okay.
I agree with that, but
sort that
the
out.
Point is let's not make an assumption that it'll always take a period of time to charge an electric vehicle in the future because the technology changes.
Can we
move on? You get the issue. Let's move on.
I'm sorry.
Anybody object to moving on? Glenn?
No. We'll get out of here.
Okay.
Okay.
So JB's talking, Ruben. Sorry.
All right. Nope. That's kind of it. So we've got wind farm, accessory dwellings, again, that's pages 13 all the way to 15. That you're going to want to think about in terms of, you know, some communities I'm working in are making very generous allowances, recognizing that a lot of people want to be able to age in place. Mom and dad move into the accessory unit and the kids and the grandkids take the big. I have one planning director client who spends most of her time doing that sort of estate planning, she calls it. So important to think about that one.
One comment I would make.
Yep.
Your minimum size is very small. 720 square feet maximum. That's a garage space for a car.
Yeah.
There ain't nobody living in that.
Says the guy on a huge lot.
I'm just saying that we're doing accessory structures. They should be reasonable. Nobody will go to the effort of building a 700 square foot.
Right.
That's not even a bedroom.
So that is a policy choice. That one is on lots of an acre or less.
Tiny homes are big.
Tiny homes can be big.
That's an oxymoron.
No, that was a qualitative statement, not a size statement.
Yes.
You're getting popular.
Whatever, but they're, you know, again, I've got communities where they want more. I've got one that's going to allow three houses of up to 1,000 square feet to count as one principal dwelling.
Wow.
To provide more flexibility. It's really worth thinking about. But talk amongst yourselves. Look at your friends and neighbors. What do you think would be realistic sizes? And remember that there's a big distinction. This is something that Ruben's written in here already. Units within a house, where 900 square feet is often, or 30% of the interior floor space is often the maximum, so that you don't basically get a duplex. But accessory structures, you know, two stories at 500 square feet, there's a lot of different options. Are you cool with, and one thing, right now this is written so that if you have a detached garage, you may not also do a detached accessory dwelling, but that's a policy decision too.
Yeah, the way you've got it, you've got to put it up on top of the garage.
Right.
Yeah, it would have to.
Which I don't know how you get to, but.
Oh.
You need at least a staircase on the outside.
Nothing to prohibit that, or an interior. So garages can be big too, in both senses. Large.
I note on page 16, donation drop boxes. Also noted in the zoning charts that they're permitted uses. those automatically go to special uses.
Okay. Yeah, because they're
prohibited.
That can be difficult.
Yes. Home-based businesses, likewise, you got to be careful on that one.
Yes.
And that's
page 17 is home-based business.
And that's the question I have. You know, how do you ultimately differentiate because so many people are working from home now?
Correct.
And maybe it's a problem looking for, or a solution looking for a problem.
We have that in now in our code, right?
Home occupation?
Yeah.
We basically talk about how you can the difference.
Yeah, I think the good one is condition number two. I think that helps a lot.
I'm seeing a lot of communities establishing a higher threshold for requiring a permit, or else, like you said, everybody would need a permit because everybody has worked from home. A threshold being outside clients, certain level of delivery, percent of the house used, or any off-site employee who regularly comes to you.
And I guess to that end, and maybe I need to read a little more carefully and cross-check, but where am I here on Artisan? Is that in the previous section?
Yep, page 15.
Sorry. Because so many artisans are home-based businesses, you know, who sell on Etsy or have their own online websites. Does that merge with one another, conflict?
How does that differ from home occupation?
I mean, I guess, and I'm just thinking within my own family.
Mm-hmm.
A basement workshop with several sergers, sewing machines, making what would generally be considered a craft, but is now generating like $50,000 a year in sales out of the basement. You know, so is that an artisan shop? Is that a home-based business? And are these conflicting between the two?
Do you guys have a definition that you use, like in Oak Creek? Or?
Sounds like a
bank. Yeah, we do have a standard definition that I'm happy to share. But in general, the artisan workshop idea is that it involves the production of some kind of physical product on site and involves the use of equipment and that type of thing to do it. And a home occupation might be more of a service, more, I'm having a hard time.
Yeah, I'm having a hard time too.
But it also says that the artisan, you can't sell anything from a site. So what good does it do to make things if you can't sell them? Now I get you could use the internet or whatever. You don't want a retail front.
You don't want retail
on your store.
Right.
There needs to be a better definition of that.
Yeah.
So maybe your definition.
Yeah, I can offer an opinion.
I'm thinking of like a daycare running out of a...
Well, that's got separate statutory protection.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's true.
Like an accountant that works out of his house kind of thing. An accountant that works out of his house, so as long as he doesn't find people there, that'd be...
Right.
That would be...
Yep. Okay, so that's the content of 1 through 4. And then just looking ahead, the other components that are really important to this are, in particular, the definitions, which is materially important to this. And then the other big chunks of work are going to be what we call the general development standards, which is like new landscaping and parking are two of the big ones, and fences. And then a lot of it is procedures, notably the natural resource protection standards. But this is a lot of meat. Hopefully this is a better, hopefully everybody's got like a general orientation to this now of like where to focus. I would suggest really looking at the permitted and conditional uses and those special use standards, and really thinking about where do these fit or not what makes them fit or not. That's really important for you as the community's leaders.
So my suggestion, as you just mentioned, next step is that we each read these documents carefully, and any corrections or glaring errors be highlighted and given to Regulo.
Mm-hmm.
Including, do you want to start on the permitted and conditional uses?
Sure. Yeah.
Because now you're going to have a coordination issue, because there's potential here you get seven different permitted and conditional uses for each one.
True.
So.
What if we had an informal meeting of the Plan Commission and staff and some others and just talk through a lot of this stuff?
I'd be happy to do
just
that.
Rather than seven of us say we want this, we don't want this, sort of make up our minds and identify those.
Yeah, but if you notice a meeting that's.
Oh, it'd be noticed.
Yeah. That usually is fine. Yep.
What I would say, then we can interact and you can answer the questions.
Sure.
And go, oh, well, let's do that.
Yeah.
Okay. So then back to my trying to sum it up. Everybody take a look at these documents, find the problems and the changes you want made, and then we'll get together and go through them.
Yep.
I'd like to do that probably, and you'd probably like to do that during the day sometime, if we could.
Whatever works. It's fine.
So, okay. You got that?
Yep.
You're good?
We'll coordinate formal, well, it has to be noticed, a meeting of the task force.
Yeah, working session.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Ruben, you good?
I think that sounds like good next steps, yeah.
JB?
Yep. Yeah.
Commissioner Haley, but push your button, please. So we can, we didn't get your last comment, so.
No, it's the proposed zoning map. When we discussed this previously, I pointed out that where there were many inaccuracies in it, and we tried to do it electronically. It didn't work. I actually marked up a map of my potential corrections and provided it to the former planning manager.
Okay.
It doesn't seem that that got integrated.
Okay.
And the reason I keep bringing it up is, one, you want it to be right, but you're basing all of your percentages for nonconforming and things like that on lots that are not buildable. You've got lots with conservation easements or deed restrictions that prohibit development on them, and yet you're showing them, for example, as residential, and they can never be sold or used for that.
Okay.
And we've got a bunch of it, a bunch of it.
I'm not privy to the back and forth on the wares. It's not necessary. Oh, I'm sorry. It's not necessarily, if there is a conservation easement on a property, it kind of doesn't matter what the zoning is. So it's
understood.
Yeah.
My point is you're looking at these areas and saying, well, we've got nonconforming properties here and there. Many of these are nonconforming for a reason, in that they've been pulled off the market. The point is zoning shouldn't matter. But when you go and you look at this and say, oh, there's all this land available in this area, for example, only to realize that it's not. It has deed restrictions that it can't be developed.
Okay.
And so that needs to just get plucked out of the formula, and you just do it by coloring those, whatever color it happens to be.
Well, they still need to have a zoning designation.
Correct. The argument would be that it's park, not residential. Because that's why.
Okay. I mean, that would be
MSD, the Green Seams programs, they're busily acquiring lands, putting deed restrictions on that they can never be developed, including even a parking lot, and then giving them to entities. So that needs to be pulled out of the formula. Those are not developable properties.
Okay. That would constitute a rezoning. That would be materially changing the zoning designation of those lots. That may be fine, but that would be...
Well, I'm just saying, let's find a different name for them. I mean, not rezoning, but you need to... Zoning affects the real and the here now, but any individual can put deed restrictions on a piece of property that preclude, for example, development in the future.
So I want to point out that there are individual parcels that are totally restricted from being developed. For example, the waste management lands have that level of restriction, or the Green Seams program that you referred to, but it's important to make the distinction that those are conservation easements, but there are also conservation easements that are on residential properties, et cetera. So this is an important discussion to have because the current draft does not reflect some of that reality of the constraints that conservation issues create in Franklin. We could consider an overlay. I think that might be one option to make it clear that those properties have those kinds of constraints.
I think in most cases, you just label them as park and open space. For, I mean, you're completely missing the state land on 116th Street. There's 140 acres of DNR-owned land that allows for hunting and can never be developed because it was purchased with green seams. So I'm not suggesting we rezone it, but our maps ought to show that as existing.
Well, but that's a different map. If you show a different color on a zoning map, you're implying that there is a different zoning district, that there's a different that there's a different allowance. Zoning maps should only show the zoning, the land use entitlement basis.
But then we shouldn't be doing calculations based upon available land for future development.
I don't believe that that happened, Commissioner. That it was really looking at.
Well, that's an important. I think Kevin. He doesn't need me to speak for him.
Okay.
But that is an important distinction. That in order, if we're going to do some ratios and calculations about land use and all that, we need to make sure that we understand exactly what the limitations are on the land that we're calculating. And that's. I think that's it, right?
Yeah, again, the map is one thing, but what we do with that information. The other glaring thing in this is the whole Root River corridor, which is owned by Milwaukee County Parks and will always be parks, is designated as floodway, just as we talked before. Those that are floodway should, but not the entire parcel. So you have to somehow show that overlay.
Well, but the floodway is the floodway. It doesn't follow parcel boundaries, and it doesn't create a parcel.
Map them by parcel boundaries right here.
I haven't mapped. No, Ruben didn't map anything.
Okay.
It's zoning has to follow. Sometimes it follows parcel boundaries, but where the zoning district is described by a natural feature, it's going to follow the boundaries of the natural feature. There's no conflict. There's nothing.
That's what I was getting at before. It should be an overlay. But the underlying ownership and use of that property will always be park and recreation.
Okay.
But yet it's showing all as floodways, the whole lots. Show the parcel boundaries discrete with whatever their zoning is and do overlays that then show the areas where there's actual floodways, floodplains, et cetera.
Okay.
Not trying to overcomplicate it, but again, this is as we plan for the future. It's not just a regulatory thing, it's a planning thing.
Right. So that a planning map of that would be helpful. Yes. Yep.
Okay. Marion.
I want to add an additional comment with this. One question I do have is we're required to prepare an annual housing report for the state listing all of the developable area, and it's generally prepared based on our understanding of the zoning map. So that feeds into this, that it's something to consider that if a parcel is zoned, for example, there are properties that are zoned in the B districts on Loomis Road that are now designated as green seams properties. Do we want to consider rezoning them, and would that be appropriate? Because they cannot be developed.
I mean, that is a policy decision for your plan commission.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Okay.
Yep.
Right.
That would be an active rezoning that would say that we designate these permanently as park and open space.
And the offer that I had made previously was to help point out some of those compromised parcels that right here are showing as developable residential, for example.
Well, again, I just want to say that zoning doesn't say that it's developable.
I know.
I understand. So it's not showing as developable. It's just that's the zoning designation. So.
Okay. Anything else? So the next step is Regulo and Marion are going to set up an actual honest-to-gosh work session. Only thing on the agenda. We'll run through these, correct any issues. We'll do the P's and C's.
Yep.
And move on.
What about remote participation for that? Yes.
we have to change the ordinance in order to allow that.
Okay, so no.
So I wouldn't say no, but it's not going to happen in 2 weeks.
Mayor, next plan commission meeting for the date or earlier?
Separate meeting. It's going to be a one-item thing.
Yep. Workshop.
I'm not going to, you know, and come in your blue jeans or golf shirts or whatever you want and get ready to work. I would like to do it during the day. I don't see any objections. I would, Patty, with all due respect, I would prefer to do it during the day, during the week, because I don't get weeknights, and I don't get many days, so I want to keep my weekends for me. So, but I'd be happy. Okay, that's fine. After 1:30.
In person, with option to remote participation for anyone that is not.
We can't yet. We're talking about modifying or changing the ordinance, but we can't.
Right, right.
So, sorry. All right. Anything else? Is there a motion to adjourn?
Second.
Hogan and Haley, the H's, say let's do it. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. We are adjourned.